American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like, and be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can do that at the website as well. You get first look at all of the upcoming guests and the most recent podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast, as well as our most recent op-eds. So happy Monday, producer Steve. We actually took a little time off. We worked like crazy and actually had everything pre-recorded for last week. And we took some time off, and you saw what you drove over 3,000 miles. Is that right? Talk about freedom of mobility.
Right, about 3,000 miles. And when you think about it, you're always told that the east to west distance of the United States is 3,000 miles. Now, that's not what we did, but it was quite a trip.
What would you say your takeaways, producer Steve, were on this this trip?
I'll try to be real brief here. Most of the time was spent in Montana. Most of the miles were driven in Montana. Coming out of a little town we had just gone through, and I should know the name, I don't. You look around, as I wasn't driving, so I had a lot of opportunity to look and observe. You see different businesses, like the community supply and feed store.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As we're leaving town, there's Al's Diesel Service and Repair. And about 3 or 4 miles out into the open ground, open country again, which there's a lot of in Montana, you see a farmer. He's disking his field, and he takes a huge cut, like 30 or 40 feet each time he makes a pass. And it just hit me. Here is the American heartland and what makes our economy go. That farmer, he does what he does in terms of providing a service and goods, food goods. He goes to Al's Diesel Repair and Service for his tractors. He goes to that farming supply store back in that town, and it all comes together. And I'm thinking, all these troublemakers in all these different cities who've never been in the country, they need to go out and they need to do a little traveling in the heartland and see what it's all about.
Well, and also what you're describing, those people work really hard. I'm from rural America, and it's not an 8-hour day. An 8-hour day would be like a vacation. These people work really, really hard, and that's why we have food on our tables. That is why we have it, and we take so much for granted. And I'm actually going through an exercise. I'm going to be with some people tonight where our homework has been two things. And that is to read the Communist Manifesto and also watch Reagan's speech from, it's the early 60s, A Time for Choosing. And the stark reality between the two different messages. And the Communist Manifesto, basically it comes down to abolition of the individual and abolition of private property. And what you're describing there with the farmer is because he gets to keep most of the fruits of his labor, he becomes more efficient and provides that product. When it was either Stalin or Lenin, I should know which one it is, when they went to the communal farms, people starved because people did not have that incentive of private property rights. And so it's great that to go to the heartland is really important. A couple of things. I want to, first of all, just go through and talk about what the show is going to be. We're going to go through some headlines. We'll talk with Bob Roth, who is running for Colorado Senate District 26. And then Justin Tosi and Brandon Warmke, they are the authors of Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. And they're both assistant professors of philosophy, Justin at Texas Tech University and Brandon at Bowling Green State University. And we'll be talking with them in the third and fourth segment. Also, this is the kickoff today of Grand Lakes U.S. Constitution Week, their annual U.S. Constitution Week. This is their ninth year. You can get more information at GrandLakeUSConstitutionWeek.com. And I'm actually going to be up there speaking on Thursday, so would love to have you come up. And truly, Grand Lake is the good Lord is showing off there. The I'm a Trumpster Minority Bus Tour is out there working. We're going to keep you updated on that. And as we look at these issues, freedom versus force, force versus freedom, socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not need force to implement it. That is why we need to be putting on our critical thinking hats and ask what and why and when and how and where and who. And that is really based on Rudyard Kipling's words. He was born in 1865, died in 1936. He was the author of The Jungle Book. I have missed the team. We have a great team. And pretty well everything went like clockwork because everybody had worked so hard before we decided to take a little bit of time off. And now that we're back after Labor Day, and we've now got a race between now and November 4th, Election Day, we've got a lot of work to do. This is a great team I get to work with, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and everyone here at Crawford Broadcasting. And to each of you listeners, thank you to you. You're treasured, you're valued. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Our quote for today is from André Gide, and he was a French author and winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature. His career ranged from his beginnings in the Symbolist movement to the advent of anti-colonialism between the two world wars. And the Symbolist movement originated with a group of French poets in the late 19th century and spread to painting and the theater and influenced the European and American literatures of the 20th century to varying degrees. Symbolist artists sought to express individual emotional experience through the subtle and suggestive use of highly symbolized language. Gide was born in 1869 and he died in 1951. And I was thinking a lot about joy this weekend. It says, know that joy is rarer and more difficult and more beautiful than sadness. Once you make this all-important discovery, you must embrace joy as a moral obligation. And it's like, choose joy. I thought that was interesting, Steve. What's your comments on that?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to trash the mood you're trying to set here. But when you were describing this guy, and you said he was a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Literature.
Okay. Well, as soon as I heard Nobel Peace Prize, you know where I'm going. So maybe we can discuss that later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we will discuss that here in just a little bit. Many of you may have seen that President Trump has been nominated for not one, but two Nobel Peace Prizes. And the radical activist leftists are going out of their minds. But we'll talk about that in the next segment. On the line with me right now is Bob Roth. My friends, these elections matter. And Bob is running for Senate District 26 here in Colorado. And we have we've gotten a taste of what happens when this Democrat Party is not the Democrat Party of JFK. We've seen what happens with the radical activists now that the Colorado Senate, the House, and the governorship have all been controlled by radical activists. And so we see why this is so important. We need to bring balance back to the legislature. And Bob Roth is one of the guys to do that. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
So things keep changing so rapidly, Bob. What are you seeing out on the campaign trail that people are concerned about?
It was interesting your intro there because when you say that it's not the Democratic Party of JFK, that's one of the lines that I use quite often. Because this is a totally different party. It's a radical party, and my opponent is showing that in his actions and the way that he's behaving and the things that he's saying. What I'm seeing on the campaign trail is that people are very concerned about quite a few things. One is they're very concerned about how we're going to recover economically after the COVID situation is done and behind us. And my opponent has chosen in the last legislative session to be involved in a couple of bills that are not going to help economic recovery. They're going to cost local businesses, small businesses, millions of dollars and put additional hamstrings on what they're trying to do in the recovery. So that is definitely not the direction that we want to go. The other thing is, of course, people are very concerned about getting their children back into the educational process safely, whether that's distance learning or in-person learning, and how they do that and what opportunities are afforded them. So, you know, there's some genuine fear out there right now.
And one other thing that seems to me that is really percolating the top is the safety of our communities. Are you hearing much about that, Bob?
Yes, I am. And as a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up because I just saw this has been happening for several weeks now, but I just saw another piece on it yesterday. Greenwood Village City Council and Mayor chose to put together a resolution to help protect their police officers from civil liability. They only have 67 officers in their police force, and they stood to lose a number of them, probably more than 10% of them, if they didn't do something to protect them. And my opponent, who lives in Greenwood Village, is adamantly opposed to what's happening with the Greenwood Village mayor and council. And he's trying to inject himself into this local control conversation and, as a sitting senator, circumvent what they're doing with their local control. I think it's just disgraceful what he's doing in using his seat to try to upend what is supposed to be happening with the mayor and city council properly.
And, you know, government should be as close to the people as possible. So local government is very important. And, you know, I'm looking at some of these headlines. I've got to get to this. But I'm looking at community safety. Let's see, Patty had pulled this, and I'm going to try to find it. But it was a very, you know, crime is on the rise. In fact, Labor Day weekend shootings continue the upward trend in urban crime and violence. It says violent crime continues to spike in the U.S. this year, while the summer historically produces an upward swing in violence. Leaders in many cities attribute the increase in shootings to the COVID-19 lockdowns. It says while journalists and politicians seem to assert that everything is fine in their neighborhoods and that the violence demonstrated over the last 6 months is a political ploy exploited by the president, cities like New York City, Chicago, Boston, they're seeing the number of fatalities grow. And we're seeing that in the Denver metro area as well, Bob Roth. And in order for people to, you know, economically come out of this, they need to have safe communities. We want to make sure our kids are safe to go to school. And so I think that that's a very important issue. And the fact that your opponent is trying to get in the middle of a locality on what they're doing to try to protect their police officers, which are trying to protect the people, I think that that is something that people should really pay attention to, Bob.
I agree 100%. I think that one of the things, or many of the things that he's doing, are hurting his campaign and helping me. But it's a matter of me getting that message to the people, because you're 100% correct that people are very concerned about the safety and security in their neighborhoods, very concerned about what's happening. And he has made it clear publicly that if the Greenwood Village Council and Mayor don't acquiesce to his demands, that he's going to, quote unquote, rev up the social media. That's not right for a senator to be trying to circumvent that local control.
So, Bob Roth, I am recommending, people are wondering what to do. Now that we're through Labor Day, people are paying attention. And I would recommend that people adopt a candidate and help that candidate. And I think you're up for adoption. I think you would certainly welcome people to help you out. So how can they get more information, and how can they contact you?
Well, thank you, Kim. I absolutely would welcome adoption. That would be great. The best way to get in contact with me is my website. I'll say it and then I'll spell it.
Okay.
So it's www.roth, rotforsd26.com. So that's rotforsd26.com. And you can go on there. You can find out more information about me, leave a message. You can certainly make a campaign contribution if you would like. Get in contact with me, and I would be happy to meet with you and chat with you about your concerns.
Very good. And Bob, you and I did a podcast, one of our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts. So if people want a little longer conversation with you, they can check that out as well. So thank you so much. Absolutely. And keep up the good work.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate the time.
You bet. And before we go to break, we're actually having some sports. The Broncos are, well, we'll have to talk a little bit about that in the next segment, about Governor Polis picking winners and losers. But it is great to have sports, and the place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants, my valued partner. They have game day specials Monday through Thursday, 6 p.m. to close. They also have to-go specials, and they have a party pack for to-go only as well. So for more information, you can go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com, and check all that out. We're going to go to break. When we come back, producer Steve and I are going to go through some more headlines.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can find all the podcasts, recaps of the shows there. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter as well. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would greatly appreciate that as well. I find this absolutely amazing. And this is from GregJarrett.com. President Trump has been nominated for a second Nobel Peace Prize, and the liberals now want the award canceled. And Jarrett says it's just too delicious. Liberals could not have been more emphatically joyful when former President Barack Obama received the Nobel Peace Prize only months after he took the office of the presidency. It was given to him in 2009 for nothing more than his verbal commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons. In only 1 week, President Trump has been nominated for not one but two Nobel Peace Prizes, both of which are for actions he actually took and accomplished. And liberals are losing their minds. The Atlantic put out an article with the unambiguous title, "In the Nobel Peace Prize, the Trump nomination shows that peace had its chance and blew it." The Atlantic author wrote, "Giving the Peace Prize to no one at all is a tradition the Nobel Committee should revive, perhaps on a permanent basis." And Jarrett says, "Our pigs-flying, peace-loving, multiculturalist liberals don't think peace is a category coherent enough to be worth recognizing. Quick, somebody nominate Biden for having done nothing, and the liberals of the world will feel much better." President Trump's second nomination came from Magnus Jacobson, a member of the Swedish parliament, for brokering the historic peace deal between Serbia and Kosovo. Jacobson made the announcement on Twitter that he had nominated Trump and the two European nations for their joint work for peace and economic development through the cooperation agreement signed in the White House. Jacobson added, trade and communications are important building blocks for peace. Of course, this is on the heels of Trump being nominated for the deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, and then I think also Bahrain. So, I mean, this is something to be celebrated. And, you know, a friend of mine said, Trump, love him or hate him, he has brings clarity to the issues. And if there's nothing more clear than this, Producer Steve.
Well, I heard this last week while we were away, and I burst into laughter because my only thing I could think of, and you've already attuned to it, is the left losing their minds. It was just hilarious trying to think of or picture their head spinning. But I go back to 2009 when this thing came down where Barack Obama was the recipient. In 2009, his first year in office, he hadn't had a chance to do anything. And as most people noted, what did he do?
Him. And this is huge, what Trump has done to give peace a chance. And, you know, Steve, through through this time that we've been working through for many, many years, you know, there would be times people would say something to me, but it was kind of like the actions didn't match up. But it's like, well, gosh, those words sound really nice. We realize, you know, how many different radical activists, liberals, have you seen the peace sign on the back of their cars? But now that there is actually something that is working towards peace, because they hate Trump so much, they can't even give him a break on that. And I think that's very clarifying. And I guess in a way, I'm kind of grateful for that. What do you think?
Well, again, I go back to 2009 and wondering why. And all I can think of is the committee felt this need to pander to this new leftist-oriented administration, and that this was their way to do it. And otherwise, I never really fully understood.
Yeah.
But in terms of what's going on right now and what you just said, here's peace between two countries that just did not get along. And I don't think the people making the most noise have a clue. They probably couldn't find these countries on a map.
Well, yeah, give peace a chance. And, you know, here during the election, they said that, that they implied that Trump would be the warmongering president. And here he is, nominated for two Nobel Peace Prizes. A couple of other headlines I want to get to is Governor Jared Polis extended the statewide mask order for another 30 days this last Saturday. It was set to expire yesterday. And the rule requires people to wear facial covering in public indoor settings. He says widespread mask wearing reduces the spread of COVID-19 infections by as much as 65%. I wonder where he's getting that information. You know, you can make these studies say anything you want. Says the statewide order is set to end on October 12th, but could be extended again. What do you want to make a bet? Do you want to make a bet that that's going to be extended again, Steve? Because I'm pretty sure it will be. We might as well.
Right up till November 4.
For sure. So it says the original order was announced in July and has been extended twice. And I tell you, the assault on freedom with this whole forced mask wearing is just very, very scary. Another thing that was most interesting, and we've seen that big government and big business like each other. And Polis, what happens then is you have your politicians and your bureaucrats and interested parties that pick winners and losers. And so this is from saltmag.online. It says, a slap in the face to our industry. Polis gives preferential treatment to Broncos over music venues. It says, with one move to give the Denver Broncos a special variance, Jared Polis spits in the face of NIVA, which is the independent venue owners, and thousands of tax-paying Coloradans working in the live entertainment industry. It is no secret that state and local governments have a downright unhealthy relationship with sports, perpetuated by the cycles of building wasteful and architecturally challenged stadiums and gentrifying minority neighborhoods. All of this suffering then is subsidized by the taxpayer for wealthy loyalists to enjoy on a few Sundays each year. Denver and the Broncos are no exception to that. Given this trend, it was inevitable that the governor's office approved a variance to the COVID guidelines allowing roughly 5,700 tickets to be sold in pods of 175 people each for upcoming Bronco games. What was a surprise is that Polis and city offices approved the Broncos variance ahead of any other submitted, showing off some blatant preferential treatment in the face of independent venues across the state that are hemorrhaging money during the pandemic. You could also put churches in there also, Steve. So a couple of things. When politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties start to pick winners and losers, particularly on this, then this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus discussion that we're having, and you could look at Nancy Pelosi getting her hair done when everybody else in California isn't supposed to. When they start to pick winners and losers, either the narrative that they are pushing isn't true, or they don't really believe, you know, what is really happening there. And so I think it's important to ask these questions. Why is it that Governor Polis would pick the Broncos over other venues out there? How about treating everybody fairly, Producer Steve?
Well, you've already nailed it. Winners over losers, and the fact that he has the wherewithal to do the something like this in the face of, you know, what you've already said, the number of people who are employed by this industry who are struggling, he just doesn't get it. He just doesn't care.
But see, what happens is that, and what I've really deduced after watching all this is an assault on the middle class. This is assault on people that are out there wanting to work, to create wealth, to, you know, take care of their families. They've really tapped down on that, but they still, you know, they closed mom and pop businesses during the COVID-19 Wuhan virus thing, but they kept the big box stores open. And so once again, it's picking winners and losers. And it's this real assault upon the middle class, which inherently, as I'm reading the Communist Manifesto, getting rid of private property rights is what they're all about. And so it's becoming clearer and clearer. We've got on the line with us Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, who has a deep love for creating wealth, because that's his business, is wealth management, to create wealth for his individual clients. Jason McBride, welcome to the show.
Well, we do our best, Kim. You know, I'm wondering if these local entertainment venues would promise the governor that their performers would all kneel and protest the flag and denigrate the whole country if he would agree to let those places open.
that's the
advantage that the National Football League has over the local entertainment spots.
You have to hand it to this guy. He always finds that little nuance that always escapes me. I really like that.
Well, I'm just trying to be helpful.
Well, I think that's unfortunately that's a good point. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You know, we're now past Labor Day, and now people are paying attention to the election. You know, we pay attention to this stuff all the time. We're bringing forth truth. We're searching to try to help people, help our listeners be able to get their brains around these issues. But now that we're through Labor Day, people are really paying attention. What does the market normally do after Labor Day as you're coming into an election like this?
You know, Kim, I'm going to have to do some more digging to see if there's like a pattern to the market between Labor Day and Election Day in, you know, of course, election years. But, you know, a couple of the words you just used, you said coming into an election like this, I don't know that we've ever had, you know, anything so contentious before that has spread, you know, through the media like this. So I don't know that as far as, you know, the markets go, that they've ever seen an election quite like this before. I'm not quite sure what to expect, as you know, from discussions on your show over the last, you know, couple of months at least. Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about what could happen between now and the election. I'm even more concerned about what could happen, you know, after the election, right, if there's going to be a bunch of lawsuits and more chaos being caused because the left has already basically lawyered up, and they've already said if they lose, that there's going to be chaos in the streets, and basically the kind of riots we've seen are nothing compared to what we will see if Joe Biden loses. So what is the market going to do with that? I don't know, Kim. I could tell you that generally, you know, September, October are kind of months that are a little bit risky where we do get sell-offs. Normally, late October, early November is where, you know, the buyers come back in. November to May being the best 6 months. But I got to be honest with you, this year, it's kind of like all bets are off, to be quite frank with you.
Well, and I think because of that, sitting down with you and your colleagues at Presidential, it really makes some sense. There may be some defensive things that people might consider. You know, every person is different. People have had an opportunity to get a gut feeling on their risk tolerance. And I think there's an opportunity now to just sit down with you and your colleagues. And I would highly recommend that. And you're going to be in studio tomorrow because you did something last year when the radical activists left say that the Trump tax cuts were only for millionaires and billionaires. You actually did an analysis on that, and we're going to go through that tomorrow, which is important because now that we're past Labor Day and people are having conversations with their, you know, their friends and their family and their colleagues, and when people say the Trump tax cuts were only for the rich guys, you've shown that that's not the case. So that's going to be a really good discussion tomorrow, Jason.
Yeah, I'll look forward to coming in and seeing you in studio, Kim. It's always a good time and entertaining, and this will be some really solid info, and it's not going to be all weird and wonky and hard to understand. It's just some direct comparisons, very easy to understand, but extremely revealing. I mean, you just can't even make an argument that the Trump tax cuts didn't help the middle class. You can't even begin to make the argument.
Well, it'll be great information. So that's Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You can reach him at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And Jason, we will see you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Justin Tosi and Brandon Warmke. And they are the authors of Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me right now Brandon Warmke, and he is an assistant professor of philosophy at Bowling Green State University. He writes about ethics and politics, and he, with his colleague Justin Tosi, have written a book, Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Kim, thanks for having me.
And your works have been featured in the Huffington Post, Scientific American, Vox, Forbes, The Atlantic, The New York Times Magazine, and The Guardian. So you've been writing about these kinds of things on a regular basis. Now, this new book that you have, Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk, I also kind of, as I was looking at this, as moral talk could also be, I was thinking, virtue signaling. So break this down for us, Brandon.
Yeah, that's a great question. So a few years ago, Justin and I started noticing that a lot of our public discourse is toxic and polarizing, and we started looking into it using the tools of philosophy and psychology, and what we've discovered is that a lot of people are using public discourse to show off how good they are, to seek status, to impress their friends, and you're right, a lot of people use this term virtue signaling. It's sort of funny. We actually started writing about this topic before virtue signaling even became a term of sort of public awareness. But for all practical purposes, yeah, what we have in mind is what most people call virtue signaling. It's the using talk about morality in politics to try to, you know, impress other people, to try to get them to think that you care deeply about the poor and so on. And this has it's caused all kinds of problems in public discourse, and we'd all be better off if we stopped using public discourse to seek status and impress other people.
Well, and on the line with us, Brandon, is your colleague, Justin Tosi, who is the co-author with you on Grandstanding, the Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. And Justin is assistant professor of philosophy at Texas Tech University, and he writes about moral, legal, and political philosophy. So, Justin, welcome to the show as well. I think he's there. Steve will get him in here. So then I'll throw this question over to you, Brandon. And that is, I was talking about President Trump and the Nobel Peace Prize. And in fact, he's been nominated not once, but twice. And now it looks like in The Atlantic, which you've written for, that they are saying that maybe that we need to end the Nobel Peace Prize. The Trump nomination shows that peace had its chance and blew it. Now, how many times, and I mentioned this, is have I been driving around and I've seen, you know, bumper stickers with the peace sign, but now that Trump has been working towards peace, it kind of seems like maybe that virtue signaling wasn't really the real deal. Brandon, what's your thought on it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably no surprise to you, but, you know, I think, and I think a lot of people think that the last, you know, 4 or 5 years have been a competition to try to see who hates Trump the most. And, whether you approve of a lot of what he does and says or a little of what he does and says, I think it's clear to everyone and looking at what my academic friends say and, you know, what intellectuals especially say, is that there is a kind of moral arms race, a kind of one-upsmanship to try to outdo each other in saying, you know, criticizing Trump and saying he's the worst at this or worst at that, and a total inability to have a sincere and honest conversation about the things that he might have done that are good. And here I think there's another situation in which, you know, these peace accords are really important. I mean, this is really a good thing, and yet all we see from certain parts of journalism and academic culture is condemnation, and it's not quite clear what the condemnation is supposed to be. I mean, so, yeah, I think a lot of this is just signaling and communicating to like-minded people just how much one hates Trump.
Okay, now we have Justin on the line now. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kim.
And you are the co-author with Brandon on this book, Grandstanding, the Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. And when Brielle sent the information over, you guys had done a piece regarding this woman, I think, in Portland that unclothed and kind of an unflattering picture of her, I guess, went viral. I'm trying to be kind of gentle on how I describe this because I wasn't totally familiar with this, but she was celebrated for something that, many of us would kind of go, huh. But yet she was celebrated for that. And how does that work in this whole moral talk, virtue signaling thing that's going on, Justin Tosi?
So a lot of what we hear about activism these days seems to glorify the people who participate in it, which can be fine. People should get credit for their good work, assuming that it is good work. But there's a risk that when people engage in activism and they get all of this flattering coverage and they get people celebrating them and turning them into some sort of celebrities like this woman in Portland is now, this they call her Naked Athena. The risk is that people will engage in activism for its own sake as a kind of attention-seeking exercise rather than as a way of doing something good. But this is, of course, not the point. If this is a defensible and important activity, this is not the point of activism. The point it should be to get out there and make the world a better place, to bring people's attention to whatever the issue is to get them to want to do something about it, to be aware that something is morally wrong in the world. And what it's become instead is a way for people to get people to pay attention to them, to think, this person must feel so strongly about this. Their moral intentions must be so pure. I should look up to them rather than to do something about this. And as far as we see it, this is an abuse of the practice of talking about moral ideas.
Okay. Brandon Warmke, when would you say that this grandstanding started?
Oh, that's a tough question. So our view of grandstanding is that it happens because of very basic features of psychology. Most, if you look at what studies show, a lot of us think we're better than average morally. We want others to think this. This is a very common human trait. And so I think as long as there have been morality in politics and human civilization, people have been grandstanding. However, Justin and I do think that there's something that's happened in American culture, specifically since about 2014, and probably aided by social media. And the idea here is that given that everyone now has a soapbox, I mean, 100 years ago, you had to go, you had to be a preacher or a politician or stay on the street corner to get attention. And now everyone can, fire up their phones and speak to hundreds or thousands or millions of people. And so the incentives are just so strong for all of us to seek status, to get people to pay attention to us, to think people, get people to think that we're great, that I think grandstanding is just, we just have more opportunities to do it. It's easier for us to fire up Twitter, get on Facebook, and try to impress people than it has been in human history. And so while the psychological ingredients are there, I think for all of us, I think what's different about the moment is both a technological difference, and then also we are just living in this, really interesting time of polarization and really strong hatred for the other side. And so I think that concoction of ingredients really makes grandstanding a ubiquitous feature of public discourse.
Okay. Well, Brandon Warmke and Justin Tosi, let's go to break. When we come back, I've got a couple of questions for you, and that is when we talk about moral talk, I mean, what is moral talk exactly? And then I'd also be really interested how the two of you met and decided to write this book. So let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Brandon Warmke and Justin Tosi. They are assistant professors of philosophy, and they've written this really interesting book, Grandstanding, the Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. Before we do that, though, producer Steve, I got to go to a wedding this weekend, and I was very pleased to give this beautiful gift of steak knives from one of our great new partners, Castlegate Knife and Tool. And it was just, it was great to get to go to a wedding, and it was great to have this wonderful gift.
Ever since they became a sponsor of the show, I have it on my to-do list to go down there to Sedalia and check them out.
Yes, it's a family-owned business right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and they have knives for collectors, for military personnel, certainly for sportsmen, everyday utility knives, and, of course, these great gifts as well. So be sure and check that out. That's castlegate.com. This is Kim Munson. We will be right back with Brandon Warmke and Justin Tosi.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. Sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website where you will get first look at all of the upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and our most recent op-eds. I'm really excited to have on the line with me Justin Tosi, who is an assistant professor of philosophy at Texas Tech University, and his colleague Brandon Warmke, who is an assistant professor of philosophy at Bowling Green State University. They've written this book, Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. So, Justin, I'm going to ask you this question. How did the two of you meet? I mean, you're clear across the country from each other. You meet and you write this book. How did that happen?
Well, you know, Kim, it's a classic love story. A couple of guys went to graduate school together and at the University of Arizona. And, you know, we'd get together and we'd work out together and talk about this thing that we were noticing of people online, just normal people, some academics, everyone seemed to be sort of going crazy on Facebook, and they're all posting about, you know, whatever thing that day they were so, you know, everyone was so upset about, and they were posting it in this way that it was like, it was almost like you were reading a politician's press release or you know, a corporate publicity statement about some issue. And it was just sort of like, what are they doing? Why are they talking in this stilted way about how they have, you know, long fought for the disadvantaged, or, you know, this is me standing up for justice. And we just thought this was so strange. And then, you know, so we looked into sort of moral psychology, and, you know, what we found is it makes a lot of sense for people to engage in impression management in this way, to try to get other people to see that they're a morally good person. So we started calling this grandstanding, and we decided to write about this as a moral problem, because we thought, you know, this is not what this is all about. You know, people should be talking about these issues because they care about the issues, not because they're trying to impress people. But it looks like that's very often what we're doing.
You just said something I've never heard that before, and that is impression management. I'm going to have to think about that. That is very intriguing. But moving over to Brandon, in your title, the name of the book is Grandstanding, the Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. And so moral, what... Who defines that? Mm-hmm. It seems like it's kind of a moving target. What's your thoughts on that, Brandon Warmke?
Yeah, moral talk, we use moral talk to just refer to all the conversations that we have about morality and politics, no matter what they're about. So it could be about, you know, what things are just or unjust or good or bad or how we should act or who we should punish or you know, all the conversations that we have about politics, about what the good policies are, what we should do. I mean, this is what we just have this catch-all term, moral talk, to refer to these conversations that we have on cable news, on your show, on social media. I mean, these are the kinds of conversations we have. And in our view, these conversations are really vital and important, especially in democracies. We have to be able to have conversations with one another about what we want to do together and what we shouldn't do and who's a good person and who's a bad person. That's a vital, vital part of human society, is having these conversations. And we have to engage with conversations with appropriate goals, right? Helping people, doing the right thing. And our view is that grandstanding, it's a use of moral talk. It's a use of this really good, important tool, but it's also an abuse of it. It uses this instrument, moral talk, for selfish, egoistic purposes. And so we think of moral talk as kind of like a hammer. I mean, hammers are really valuable. We can use them to build homes, but you can also do horrible things with a hammer. And nobody over the age of three would cheer every swing of a hammer. No mature adult should cheer every instance of moral talk. Some kinds of discussions are just not good, and we think that one kind of bad discussion to have, one bad motivation for engaging in moral talk, is trying to make yourself look good. It's not what it's for.
Okay, so you're making making my brain work really hard on this Monday morning here. So Justin Tosi, what I've found is that there are times when I'm in conversations with people where I feel that there's no intellectual curiosity, that there's more of a, you know, I have my view, you have your view, that's what it is, we'll agree to disagree. And it really takes intellectual curiosity, and I think I'm paraphrasing C.S. Lewis. I think that I heard this at one point in time, that if, in fact, you cannot defend your idea or your premise two or three questions in, I would really recommend, instead of throwing your hands up and saying, well, we just agree to disagree, it seems like you should check your premise, to have some intellectual curiosity to try to make sure that you're basing, there's a foundation. What's your thoughts on that, Justin?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think one thing that people might not really think about is that our moral views, the things that we think are valuable, the things that we think are right, and you know, the way that we think the world should be organized, it isn't. I mean, these are just beliefs, as you say, but they're also a part of who we are. So when we get to talking about these issues, when people disagree with us, it can be really threatening. And in fact, it isn't just when we disagree with people who have views very different from us. People who are kind of on our side, there can also be a lot of pressure to present, this is getting back to the idea of impression management that you flagged. There's just a lot of pressure to present yourself in a really flattering light. So what we end up doing in a lot of these discussions isn't, diving in and, taking those two or three questions in stride and really plumbing the depths of what we ought to believe. What we end up doing instead is succumbing to pressure to show people that our heart's in the right place. This is, as Brandon said, a kind of a part of who we are. We're sort of designed to operate this way. But it's something also that is not ideal in some ways. Like we need to be able without making them all about how we're coming across.
So Brandon Warmke, I find that many people are very uncomfortable with conflict on, when you're in the same room personally. But I find it interesting that people on social media, I might meet them at some other place and it's like, are you the same person? I don't quite understand. And I find that really interesting, Brandon.
Yeah, this is actually some really nice evidence that we talk about in the book for why we think people are so nasty and why they grandstand. So there's just some things that people would say in front of their hundreds or thousands of friends about you, they might say something about you, Kim, and really horrible. And what they're wanting to do is they're wanting to impress their friends, right? They're wanting to get them to pile on and affirm them and make them look good, but they would never dare send you a private message and say that. They wouldn't walk up to you at a party and say those things. And in our view, it's evidence that what they're doing is they're not really interested in having a conversation with you when they do these nasty things in public, these mean things in public. What they're trying to do is perform. It's performance art. And it just so happens that you or whoever it is gets caught in the fray. And so that's actually a really nice point. I mean, one of the things we argue in the book is that lots of the behavior that we do is because we're incentivized to perform. We're incentivized to go through these routines and rigmarole and public spectacles in order to make sure people know that we're a good person and criticize our enemies. But most of us would never dare say those things to someone's face or in a private message. And for us, that's evidence that what's really going on is people aren't really trying to have conversations. They're trying to engage in a public spectacle.
Fascinating. So, okay, we've got just 2 minutes left, and so I'm going to give you each a minute for final thought. Brandon Warmke, co-author of Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk, what's the takeaway you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, the one thing we just encourage people to do is when they engage in public discourse, no matter what side they're on, ask themselves whenever they're about to post or tweet or say something, ask themselves, you know, am I doing this to do good? Am I really going to do good, or am I doing this to look good? I think oftentimes when we ask ourselves, am I doing this to look good, it may be better to just not say anything at all.
And, okay, fascinating. And Justin Tosi, a co-author of Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk, what is the final takeaway you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Yes, I'll take the other side of this. So I'll say, you know, at the very end of this book, we've got some practical advice about what to do about grandstanding. One of the things that I just want to highlight here is to remember that talking about moral grandstanding in public should take the kind of same view as the rest of moral talk. You should keep in mind that the point of talking about these issues isn't to manage anyone's reputation, including people who you think are grandstanding. So don't call people out. Try to make a difference by talking. If you want to talk about grandstanding in general, that's fine. But your primary goal should be to avoid doing this yourself.
Gentlemen, I think this sounds like a fascinating book. Brandon Warmke, Justin Tosi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Kim.
And again, that book is Grandstanding, The Use and Abuse of Moral Talk. And our quote for today is from Andre Gide. He said, "The true hypocrite is one who ceases to perceive his own deception, the one who lies with sincerity." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Wandering